Accession number 30638, Mr. Peter Wayne, Reel 10. What's the next thing you remember? That's VE Day. So the war's effectively over, because you're not interested in what's going on in the Far East.
No, at that time, I mean, VE Day, of course, was the 8th of May. The army then allowed, we were allowed home leave. Of course, we hadn't seen our relatives for nearly a year. And I was granted the first home leave. All those of us who actually went over to France in the first 2 months of D-Day were granted 10 days home leave. I did go home for the first time, as I say, after that period at the end of May.
So you came back to England?
I came back to England, yes. And stayed with, of course, my family, my brother and my mother in London. I also then realized suddenly how much damage the doodlebugs and the V2 bombs had done to London, because there were quite a number of houses next to us. We did live at Notting Hill Gate at the time. There was great relief, of course, that people didn't have to spend the nights in the tube. But I also remember that we were still strictly rationed, and although I got military rations, which meant rather more generous allocation of food, which I shared, of course, gladly with my family. At that time, I was very anxious to take up my professional training again, but I was very badly needed in Minden. Minden being the nearest town to Porter. We had in Minden a proper office building. We had ticker machines, and we had actually employed, apart from the, I think, 8 of the Hungarian girls, we also had to employ some German girls who were very anxious to be with us on non-military matters. They acted as secretaries because they got a good meal at lunchtime. So we were really running an administrative office. My job was to travel in the area, which was probably the size of Wales, which included towns like Paderborn, Hameln, Bielefeld. And my job was to travel to these various towns, attend court, and act as interpreter to senior military officer who dished out even death sentences. They were an odd bunch of accused.
Now, what were these courts like?
They were small. They were small courts, and most of the proceedings were without attendance of any Germans. They were held in.
These are military courts.
They were military courts. It was a senior officers accompanied by 2 assistants, usually junior officers, and German counsel, defense counsel, and myself as an interpreter.
And how would it go? I mean, what was the procedure?
The procedure was that the judge officer would read out the indictment, would then ask, just like it was later on in Nuremberg, do you plead guilty or not guilty? Then the German Defense Council would plead some ridiculous excuse, and which I also had to translate, and then sentence was passed. We did deal with three or four cases.
Was it much in the case of defense? I mean, they didn't have defense.
Well, the defense counsel was...
was another officer, was it?
No, the defense counsel was the civilian German, because that was very important, that it wasn't just a summary military court. They had their own defense counsel. I had great difficulties in interpreting, because the verbosity of these German lawyers was intense, and the German language, which always has the verb at the back, at the end, it caused me great difficulties, because the defense counsel would say the accused was alleged on the 14th of April whilst the sun was at its zenith and the day was clear, to have, and then it went on and on, and I still didn't know what was he doing. Was he killing, was he beating, or was he kicking? And some of the legal officers, and it happened to me several times, sort of pulled me up and said, "Interpreter, you are not interpreting." And I used to reply, "Sir, I'm waiting for the verb," which was a relevant thing. On one occasion, commanding officer, the judge officer, was actually quite rude to me. I complained about it. And he was later on sent off to a minor court because he was really insulting. He didn't understand a word of German, and he did not understand the intricacy of the language. In June 1945, we were given a new order.
So you were just doing that.
I was doing that. It was
my... Can you talk a bit about the non-fraternization? Because
yes.
You mentioned it, but you didn't really get into it. I mean, how seriously was it observed amongst you and amongst the Germans?
The fraternization, I mean, I met one of my officers with his German secretary, whom he had. He didn't have a Hungarian one. I had a Hungarian one. I met him one early morning coming out of one of the houses with his secretary, and I of course realized at that time that his relationship was somewhat more intimate than boss and secretary. However, by and large, I think we adhered to that. In June 1945, the fraternization, we had some information from headquarters that fraternization with small children should be allowed, because we wanted to get the youngsters to realize that we were not animals or indeed that we were decent people. And we were told this, that you must start with small children and try and re-educate them first, because they are the easiest to persuade. They were not. Some of our comrades interpreted this, small children, as girls under the age of 21. No, fraternization sort of petered out at that time. But I myself, with the job I was doing, and we had some pretty horrifying accused.
Do you remember any of them in particular, or was it?
Well, it wasn't just military people. There were, I remember one court case was, of course, where a man was accused of... he was an industrialist, and he was accused of raiding cemeteries or following hearses, and then using human flesh, put it in tins and sold it. Things like that, which was, of course, horrifying. They were imprisoned. I remember cases of incest and other, what I called non-military cases. On the other hand, we had quite a number of...
Are these military courts or not?
Yes, they were military courts.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But there were no German courts, you see.
That's what
except
I'm,
we just had German solicitors, which we, in some cases, I don't think they were even qualified solicitors, because we always were very anxious that the defense had to be operated. Defense counsels always had to be Germans. Well, first of all, because of the language problem, and secondly, it should not be said that we had sort of summarily sentenced people without... Like
what were the range of sentences? I mean, were they sentencing people to death, or were they largely imprisonment?
They were, in many cases, imprisonment, but I did remember that in some cases people were sentenced to death, because I used to pronounce the usual formula in German: you shall be taken to a place of execution where you shall be hanged by the neck until you are dead, and may the Lord have mercy upon your soul. I repeated that at least 20 or 30 times during my...
And what would attract that? Was that for actual murders or
that was for murders. That was even for Nazis who... people like local Nazi bosses who actually shot people who said, oh, the war is over, we are not going to flee, we are not going, we are going to stay put. They were just, you know, they were just summarily shot by these guys. And of course, when they were caught, we hanged them. I did go to Nuremberg just as a matter of interest for one day and attended court. But when I think about it, we were really doing the same job. Of course, we didn't have such prominent members, but of the Nazi Party, and we didn't have Russian officers. We just had senior British officers.
What did you think of the Nuremberg trials on your visit? Was it just a visit, just to see what?
It was a visit, and I think I had a couple of days leave, and I decided I would like to go how they handle matters. It was, of course, they had far more technology at that time, because if you will remember from the films, all the accused people like Goering had earphones. Now, our court, we didn't have these sophisticated means. It was all done by the poor interpreter who had to do this two-way interpreting. I do remember also using my French, which came in very useful, and I remember it was my own war at that time was in a way not pleasant, but it was quite agreeable. But I still wanted to get home. I was not...
You were looking forward to demobilization.
I was anxious to be demobilized. The colonel told me I would... He could get me a higher rank, and maybe even a commission if I would stay. But at that time, we had already control commission officers who were civilians, who were sent out from Britain, probably went through the same training.
How did they link up with you, or did they not?
Well, they did link up with us, and I had a lady... They had the equivalent rank of captain, but I mean, they weren't military, but we still had to treat them as our superiors, and I was
so
not.
How did they link up with you? I mean, were they part
They were supportive. They were really support people. By that time, I had two additional interpreters who were assisting me.
Who were they?
They were sergeants. One was a Viennese ex-enemy alien, and the other one came from Hamburg.
And were these, like yourself, German?
One was an Austrian, one was a German. So we were three at that time. And as time went on, we
now, were you all sergeants then, but they were on the...
They were sergeants, and by that time, Colonel Usher gave me another crown. I was then the senior... I was a staff sergeant. The only other non-commissioned rank was a sergeant major, who, of course, was British, and he actually consumed the generous allocation of alcohol which we were given each week.
You weren't drinking much. You didn't drink.
I never did. I enjoyed occasional drink. I was storing it in my clothes cupboard. He one day stood in front of a tram, which we got going again between Porta and Minden, and refused to move. The driver of the tram actually gave a signal with a bell, and he actually refused to move. The tram stopped, but apparently it couldn't stop quick enough. He was run over, killed, and buried with military honors. We sold, which was customary at the time, you sell some of his belongings and whatever he had, and then send it with a generous gift to his widow. I then became, being the senior staff sergeant, acting sergeant major. And
any other big... So you're still doing the same job?
I was doing all the time the same job. We've been issued at that time also with a booklet telling us about who were the largest, most ardent supporters of Hitler in his early days, because he suddenly was riding around in Mercedes cars even when before he became the leader of the of Germany.
So these are his wealthy backers.
Wealthy backers.
Now, were you looking for these?
We were indeed looking for them, and there is one family, and they are still the owners of perhaps one of the greatest German conglomerate producing food, travel agents, hotels, and that was the Oetker family, Oetker.
And what was it? I mean, did you know about them in particular? Or?
Well, we were, they lived, or they were based in a huge manor house, one can almost call it a castle, in Bielefeld, which was part of our district. I believe I mentioned to you the district, Regierungsbezirk district, of Minden, which included all these other towns, was larger than the size of Wales. And with five administrative offices, 20 men, to administer a huge area like that was quite a task. I forgot to mention that part of Germany...
Did you do anything to the Oetkers?
Yes. That part of Germany had suffered relatively little, and even the food situation was reasonable compared to people living in the large cities like Berlin. There was no starvation because it is largely an agricultural town, agricultural area. I was told that the Oetker family lived in Bielefeld, and I was asked to investigate. I drove up to their house. I would call it a small castle. I rang the bell, and I rang it three times. The door was opened, and there was something so unbelievable. It was opened by a butler. I said, "Can I speak to Mrs. Oetker?" The only relative was a very elderly lady who came out on her walking stick and was extremely rude to me. "What do you want? There is nothing in this house. There are no weapons." I said, "We're not looking for weapons. I don't assume you're using a gun at your age." Anyhow, reluctantly, we pushed past her, and I had never seen such a wealthy, untouched home. There were pictures on the walls. There was silver on the sideboards. I interviewed this woman who said, "We had some Americans coming through, and they were vandals." And she showed me a bookcase which had been forcibly opened by some Americans. We then went into the courtyard, and we saw the most beautiful, huge black limousine. It was a Maybach. Incidentally, the Germans are now producing these luxury cars again. I think they cost £200,000 in this country if you import them. My colonel, who was, I told you, elderly, had already obliged to use a jeep, and I immediately told her that we were going to take this car. And I, after being subjected to further abuse, they couldn't use it. It was, the wheels were taken off. It was blocked up. It was in pristine condition. But there was no petrol for them. So we requisitioned this vehicle. I gave the lady a receipt. And she was still abusive. And I said, "You know, your friends in the Nazi party are no longer in charge. We are now in charge. So please shut up." I have never been rude to ladies before, especially elderly ones, but I thought this was the way to deal with this woman.
Was anything done? Because, I mean, taking a car from a family like that, I mean, it would be a lot to a normal person, but it's not much to them in the scheme of things. Was there no one to latch onto from the family?
I believe some of the members of the family were questioned, interviewed, but we just reported the facts that there was one old woman there with the butler, and probably some other servants whom we didn't see. And there was no one that we could really get hold of any importance. I think they were either in the war, they were prisoners of war or something.
They obviously, one way or the other, the family either evaded or were, however you want to phrase it.
They are bigger than ever now, but then so are the Krupps. You see, Krupp was actually taken to task. But there were other people there, the family, the Quants, who own BMW now. The actual members, I expect this woman's son, they were probably arrested. and then released again after being interviewed. Whether the Oetkers used slave laborers in their factory was not known at the time. So they all got away with it and lived happily ever after until this day.
Now, what about anything? Any other things you remember from this period? You know, other jobs or prominent people that you dealt with?
No, this surrender of the tanks officer. I do remember that we then had to deal again with a lot of displaced persons. Some of them were Ukrainians. I got another 10 days of compassionate leave to go to Berlin.
Now, what was this? Can you explain what was happening?
Yes, I had an aunt living in Berlin. She was not Jewish, although she was non-Aryan. She had some Jewish blood, but she was untouched. And at Christmas 1945, my colonel again said, I would like to go and see Berlin. You come with me. We'll take the Maybach, this lovely black limousine, and we take a driver with us, because we had to go through the Russian zone at that time. But we had the British flag on the car, and we drove to Berlin. On the way, we were held up several times by Russian soldiers who prodded their machine pistols into our chests, no respect whatsoever, and said, you nice coat. We had it was winter and we had our great coats on. You give me coat, you have woman. They had, of course, some awful females lurking in the back. And we were warned about this. They had no respect for rank or anything. So we were warned about it, and I had loaded up about 500 cigarettes. And I was sitting in the front next to the driver. Colonel Usher was in the back. And we say, no, coat, we need very cold. And we handed over 3-4 packs of cigarettes to them, and they let us pass. Considering that we were actually allies at that time, we thought it rather odd. Their behavior was very odd, but at that time it was a free-for-all for them, because Stalin had allowed them to rape and plunder, which they did very successfully. We remember that we got to Berlin, which, of course, was total.
What did you think? I mean, you used to live in Berlin. What was your reaction?
I did not recognize some of the central parts whatsoever. I took photographs of some streets, and it was only some of the street signs which reminded me, yes, there was something here. Berlin was two-thirds destroyed. I did find my aunt, who actually lived in the house of a cousin, and that was it had no windows, there was no heating, and they were just boiling some potato peels. The ration was 7 grams of butter or whatever, fat, per day, and it was really pathetic to see how the difference of conditions in a town like Berlin and the small towns in Westphalia where I was stationed.